Hello and welcome to today's Future Ready webinar. I'm Tom Murray, the Director of Innovation for Future Ready Schools, a project of the Alliance for Excellent Education located in Washington, D.C. Future Ready Schools is a collaboration between the Alliance and a vast coalition of over 60 other national and regional organizations. The goal of Future Ready Schools is to maximize learning opportunities and to help school districts move quickly towards student-centered learning. The effort provides districts with resources and support to ensure that local technology and digital learning plans align with instructional best practices, are implemented by highly trained teachers, and maximize learner-centered experiences for all students, particularly those from traditionally underserved communities. Future Ready Schools would like to thank Konica Minolta, a great Future Ready partner, for sponsoring today's webinar. The hashtag for today's event, as always, is Future Ready. Thank you for making an investment and joining us today. I'm going to be your host on this webinar on keeping cybersecurity at the forefront of remote learning. And with me today, I am so excited to have two of Future Ready's lead advisors, Dana Kastein and Dr. Adam File. So what an honor it is to have you both with us today. Thank you for all the work you do for Future Ready Schools, and also just a recognition of the incredible work that you each lead in your school districts. So Dana, we will start with you. Can you take a moment to introduce yourself?
Absolutely. Hi, Tom. Hi, everyone. It's an honor and privilege to be part of this Future Ready event. I'm Dana Kastein and currently the proud Director of Math, Science, and Technology for the Florida Union Free School District located in Florida, New York. Prior to that, I was a sixth grade classroom teacher and then a teacher on special assignment with the main duty of new program implementation. It's my 27th year as an educator. Thanks so much for having me today.
Awesome, Dana. And I know you work closely with one of our partners, NiceGate, up there in New York, and a shout out to them. So let's head down south to Adam. Tell us a little about your work.
Hi, everybody. My name is Adam File, and I'm representing the Newton County School District in Covington, Georgia, also known as the Hollywood of the South. I'm happy to be here and really share some of the things that we're doing in Georgia. Really, we were one of the first states to reopen after this pandemic has hit. And so we are really just in the same standing a lot of districts are, trying to figure out what comes next and prepare for the unknown. So really happy to be here and hear what Dana has to say and learn from everyone else that's going to be attending this webinar.
Well, thank you both. And it's such an honor to have you both here, truly. And kudos for, like, here we are in July and you're still breathing and you're still standing after a crazy, crazy year that we will all look back at, you know, in our careers here. So it's no secret, you know, that 2020 has really opened our eyes to so many things. And as the pandemic really began to scale back in March, educators were forced to really redesign their student learning experiences seemingly overnight. You know, that large scale move to remote learning really caused some large scale concerns in many areas, but two in particular for tech leaders around cybersecurity and privacy. You know, let's take a few minutes if we could and reflect on the past few months and the work that your both of your districts have done in this area. So Dana, let's start with you. Talk to us about what's gone, what you guys have done in New York or districts nearby as well, and just reflect for a few minutes on remote learning there those past few months.
Well, in order for us to really prepare to go to remote learning, we had a little, I guess, foresight and insight. And prior to closing and actually going home, we went into every instructional space. We went into every classroom and met with every student and had some really deep conversations with regard to access, reminding students of, you know, some things that they really need to rely on, such as our portal that we have where they can access information. We also had a session for teachers as well. And the focus not only was to educate people about, you know, what we were perhaps using, but also some of the safety and security behind all that to make sure that, you know, people's information was going to indeed be safe. After we were sent home, which was, you know, towards the end of, or I'd say between the middle and end of March, we provided professional learning sessions 3 to 4 times a week for 2-hour sessions during the course of the day. And while we were teaching things like, you know, how to use Google Meet and reinforce those, we also embedded a lot of security information in those sessions as well. So they were somewhat twofold. And in the end, it proved to be a very positive experience where Some teachers were asking, you know, I have this great thing I'd like to use. Can I indeed use it? So there was a lot of awareness that was built within that. And also with the previous initiation of the Parent Bill of Rights in 2014 in New York, we were able to start that work many years ago and then just continue to build on it today.
Yeah, one of the interesting aspects from Future Ready is comparing states. Obviously, you know, federally we have FERPA and SIPA and COPPA and PPRA and things that relate to the digital laws that we all have to adhere to. But, you know, your state laws there in New York, as you just referred, and versus Georgia are going to be different there as well as your local board policies will be, different in how we dictate some of this work that we do. Adam, if you would take a couple minutes just to think from your experience as well, just as we reflect on the COVID pandemic and, you know, the ed tech side of things, the networking side of things, and what you've led there in Georgia. Talk to us for a couple minutes, if you would, on your experience.
One of the things that we found with this pandemic and how we deliver teaching and learning, it really brought a new cybersecurity and privacy issues that we weren't expecting. Of course, we hit the initial cybersecurity, make sure you don't share information with outside public. You know, we put some protocols in place previously where it would scan documents to see if someone was sharing a social security number or things of that nature. So we thought we had the cybersecurity and the privacy thing under wraps because it was one model that we were using. Well, this pandemic totally threw our model out the window. And so we had to figure out what new cybersecurity and privacy issues that we were going to have to deal with. I know one thing we were in the process of working on prior to this, we were working with WebEx as a platform to kind of do some virtual training. So we weren't necessarily looking at doing it for every single teacher in the classroom. We were looking at setting up some accounts and doing some professional learning virtually. So basically that got thrown into hyperspeed. But in the meantime of us trying to set that up for all teachers to use, they ended up finding their own solution. So we had a lot of teachers that were utilizing Zoom. Zoom became the platform of choice. So it kind of won the war before it began within our staff. So we had to then educate our staff on all those different privacy issues and concerns that Zoom kind of had at that time. And, you know, they were trying to do the best that they can, which I applaud them for. But ultimately, you know, we know why we have district accounts, so we can manage and we can control and we can pull up user records and data. We know what's being shared. So it was that education piece and something we didn't even think about. But because I think everybody was doing the sharing of issues that they were coming up with, educating our staff on the privacy of now you have a window into a child's house. So not even just the data security, but now you're seeing how they're living. And if kids don't want to turn on their camera, it may be because they're embarrassed about their home life. They don't want you to see what's going on in their home. So you have in that conversation of telling teachers, you can't mandate that a child turns on their camera because they have their own personal privacy where you can't see what's going on in their house. They have that choice. So it was just those additional kind of privacy and cybersecurity pieces that weren't even an issue in March all of a sudden became new issues. So it was really for us and my team staying on the cutting edge of what's the new concerns that are going to come out based on how we are teaching and learning, and it's still changing. I think someone mentioned in another webinar that I sat in, we're not over COVID, just because we think we are. It's still happening, cases are still going up, so we're constantly going to have new security and privacy issues that are going to arise, especially when you look at everybody's coming up with brand new tech solutions to these problems, and we need to make sure we are aware of what questions we need to ask these companies as it relates to how they're securing our data and what's being shared with outside parties that we're not aware of.
Yeah, so well said. And I appreciate you bringing up some of those issues that we've seen there as well. You know, let's talk about that teacher side for a little bit as we look towards the fall there as well. You know, it's funny, through our work at Future Ready Schools, like I get to interact with so many teachers that are out there, whether they're at conferences, and I know you both do as well. And when I get to talk to teachers, many times I'll ask them about their technology departments as a former technology director myself. And so I know that what I seem to find, and maybe you've experienced the same, is they really seem to either like love their technology department and they see them as problem solvers and they break down the red tape and they break down barriers to get them what they're needed, or they'll quickly jump to like, the answer is always no, they always lock and block, they're always the issue. And it's really funny. I always kind of find it as one or two cases there. And, you know, when we take a look, many times teachers are really asking for, hey, I need this app. Hey, can I get this website? I really believe it's all well-intended stuff. Teachers are trying to put things in the classroom. Now we're forcing. I mean, the classrooms have people's homes have become their classrooms. They're trying to do all this digital stuff. How do you all balance the sites and the apps and the extensions for both students and staff, especially during remote learning? I mean, let's face it, as three tech directors, myself being a former one, there's things we have to say no to. But how do we balance all those pieces with not making sure that, hey, I need this app, and then they're getting an answer 4 months later, like well into another semester, right? And Adam, especially you're in a large district, you've got a lot of people, you know, and what does that look like? What are the processes or protocols? How do you communicate with a teacher so the answer is not just, nope, can't do that, but maybe explain why so they understand? Because what we've seen with tech departments, if the answer is always no, people will just try and do what they can to get around it, both students and staff, we know that. So talk to us if you would, Adam, I'll ask you to go first on this one. How do you work through a process to support teachers with sites and apps and extensions as they need it, as they put in requests, but making sure that it's efficient on your end and making sure that they get what they need in a timely manner? What's that look like for you?
Wow, good question there. And one of the things, and kind of going back to the whole Zoom versus WebEx conversation, for us, WebEx was our platform that we were using, but you know, we as a tech director, you have to be smart enough to realize where the mob is heading, if you will. If they're heading in that direction, if the wind is flowing, you can't fight the wind. So you have to figure out a way to make it work. So ultimately, you know, for example, with that one, we told them, hey, our staff isn't trained today to support you on this platform. We have a platform that we can support you on, but once the end of the school year happens, we go through and we evaluate tools. So if there's another platform that the teachers like better, then we let them know, hey, we will examine, we will look at and see whether or not this fits within our current ecosystem and how to make it work. Because if they know that we are working with them, I think it makes our life a whole lot easier. And you kind of mentioned it in the question, we also have to do a good job of informing them why the answer is no on a certain platform. For example, we use Canvas as our learning management platform. So because of that, we don't allow Google Classroom. And it's one of those things where we let our teachers know, hey, this is not, it's not about you. And on this is about the kids. So we want consistency and for our students, because especially at our secondary students, going from class to class, they have to be uniform in their learning management platform. Because it wouldn't make sense for a teacher to have a different type of gradebook program for each period that they taught. And when I said it to them like that, they're like, oh yeah, that makes sense. And it's our kids from elementary, middle, and high, they have that continuity in the platform that they're using. Parents can have that same ability to know what platform we're using as a district. So it really makes it simple and easy for our end users, which are our students, to use the support. So it's really on us, on as a technology department, to make it clear to our stakeholders why we're using these tools. And if they say, well, this tool does this, well, you didn't know that our learning management platform can do that too. Let me show you. Or this is, it can also grade papers and you just didn't know how to do it. So sometimes it's that education piece that we have to realize that maybe the staff didn't know that the tool that we're paying for that we have integrated accounts with does that. They just didn't know how to do it. Or maybe that our current product does a really crappy job of it and we have to talk to the vendor and say, hey, our teachers don't like the way this product does this and there's another product that does it a whole lot better. Where is this on your roadmap? Because you need to make it do what we want it to do, or we're going to take our money elsewhere. So we also have to put the pressure on the vendor to make sure our tools that we are purchasing does what our staff and students need it to do.
Yeah, some powerful words there. And I think, you know, it's really getting to the question, as a technology department, as a technology director, do you see your staff and your students as part of the solution or the problem? And I think a lot of that's a mindset oriented piece there as well. Dana, what's your experience with that, especially during remote learning around that approval process, things coming your way, and what's that look like on your end in New York?
So I think Adam said it well. For us, it really boiled down to conversation and asking questions and really wanting to hear more. When someone wanted to use a specific site or an app, the question was, well, tell us more. What are you trying to do? What are you trying to achieve? What's your why for using it? And really 9 times out of 10, we really found that we already had a solution that was pre-approved for use in district. So one of the things that we did prior to actually leaving for our at-home sessions for remote learning, we developed a remote learning website. And on that site, we had all of our district-approved apps, extensions, and such listed there. And we constantly directed people towards that so that they could see, you know, the different things that they could use with their students or, you know, amongst each other while at home to make sure that there wasn't any issue with sharing of any kind of private information. The other thing that was on that website was a tech support form. Out of the last few months, we completed over 325 requests, which may not sound like a lot, but for a district that has 800 students, we really met a lot of needs. And that wasn't just for privacy and security. It was for any need that anyone had. So students, parents, teach staff, everybody had access to it. And many people did make requests on that site. So we looked into certain things, and there were probably four or five different sites that we were able to approve within the process, and teachers were able to use them with their students. And then they were embedded into our professional learning plan. And we mentioned all the privacy and security information that might be associated with them. The other thing that we found was through that tech request form, we had families who were making requests like, you know, something's not working. And when we contacted them and had some communications about what their challenges were, we found that some teachers were indeed using things like Zoom instead of Google Meet. And it was causing some confusion because the consistency, as Adam said previously, is really, really the key. So if you have, you know, someone at home who's trying to help their kindergartner, their third grader, and their sixth grader, and everyone's using a different solution, that means that that parent has to learn three new online communication solutions. And it's really, you know, that's really not a fair thing to do. So our district's decision was to stick with one in particular, really provide some in-depth training for that, and also make sure that our students, our parents, and our staff knew how to use it. And so that was definitely very, very helpful. And the other thing that we did is we asked questions. We actually sent out surveys to the staff. We wanted to know how we were doing. So that information was definitely helpful. And we do that along the way anyway. Every year we have a tech committee meetings. We basically meet three times a year, and there's lots of conversation of where are we? Where are we headed? What are some things that people are looking to implement? And from that, then we're able to review and vet those resources to make sure that they're in use for people when they need, as opposed to, you know, having to wait 3 months to access it.
Yeah, lots of great conversation and such valid points that you're sharing. And, you know, one of the things that, as I hear you both talk, I hear the teacher side of you come out, and knowing that you've both been in the classroom, that you've both been on those side of things. And I think for tech directors that have that experience, it certainly gives you the lens of why things need to be timely, or understanding why might a teacher be asking for certain things there. The flip side to that, for tech directors that haven't been in the classroom or haven't, you know, stood in front of kids or haven't been the one getting the questions from a gradebook issue from parents, you know, my goal for them is often in working with them is talking about, hey, spend time with your teachers, communicate with your teachers, go spend times in classrooms or whatever the case might be, so you can really understand why they're asking what they're asking. I think in some districts, there's so much finger pointing between the tech department and sometimes everybody else. Sometimes it's the curriculum department. Sometimes it's the teachers. And it's kind of this power struggle, as opposed to what I'm hearing you saying of like, no, the teacher voice matters. Like, we are there to serve kids. And, you know, when we look at those pieces related to that, how do we make sure we have that servant heart? And the tech department is not just the stop gate where we're going to have that God access and tell you whether or not you can do something. If the answer is no, we need to share, here's why. Here's the concerns that we have with that. And when I was the tech director, kind of our unwritten rule to say in our department was, when we need to say no to staff, we need to turn around and say, here's why, but here's a solution or two that will work for what you're looking to do that we can approve, so that we're seen as that problem-solving, solution-oriented, and not just the gate where no always comes across, because that in the way, and eventually just really gets in the way of kids and learning there as well. So let me ask you this question. One of the things that I guarantee has hit your radar over the past number of months, as the pandemic hit, this idea of free software and free apps was completely running rampant over the past number of months. And I want to pause and say, you know, I do give companies kudos for saying, we're going to open up our platform, we're going to allow people to use it for free. But I know tech directors are like, yeah, But there's a huge side of the privacy, and what are they doing with the data? And what if kids' information's in there, which we have to ask. So on one hand, kudos to companies for offering it to support. But on the other hand, it's not just as simple as, great, go use any free thing that you want because you guys sit in the seats that you sit in. So how have you handled that? Dana, we'll start with you. With all of these free things that popped up, free subscriptions and those kinds of things that popped up, to be proactive with not just students, but with teachers and even our administrative colleagues as well about some of these free offers. How did you handle all of that?
Well, I have to say, my email is happy that we're almost to June 30th, because prior to that, you know, literally hundreds of emails a day came in with, you know, we're opening this up, you know, this is free until this time, or sometimes it was, there was no time frame associated to it. And again, it was through that conversation. We were very fortunate to have many of our teachers and staff members and administrators attend the professional learning sessions that we had. And it's through that communication where people had the opportunity to make comments in the chat about, you know, Flipgrid is great, but what if I use this instead? Or, and it really gave us an opportunity to have those conversations, because you're right, everyone was getting those emails. And I remember early on, you know, one of our administrators had said, I just don't understand why we can't use Zoom. It's free. It's great. And literally a week later, there were some very colorful information that was, you know, released in the news with regard to Zoom and some of the things that they were experiencing. So it kind of validated some of that information. But as far as that, the free, you know, we really had to vet that information. And if someone made a request and we didn't have that opportunity, as you said before, to say, no, we have this other solution that you could use instead, we really did provide those reasonings behind, you know, why we would have to say no. And you know, one thing to keep in mind too is budget. A lot of these things were not budgeted for prior to, you know, going into the next school year. So that was also a conversation. You know, I know our budgets in New York have been hit very hard, and I can only imagine it's the same all around the United States. So with that being said, you know, some of our answers also had to be, we're trying to protect as many people and program as possible. And it's very difficult to, you know, take all these solutions on where they'll be paid when we return to brick and mortar or whatever it might be in the fall. So how did we handle them? We really did look at our remote learning site. We tried to provide some options to people. We constantly directed people towards that. And, you know, we tried to help out as many people as we could with making as many of their requests available to them as we could possible.
So Adam, let me ask you a similar one. I'm that teacher in your district in Georgia, and I see this free tool online that it's all the rage on social media. People have been calling it a game changer. There's one for you, tech director. And so I call Dr. File because he's going to solve all my issues here in whatever grade level, and justified to me, like, why can't I use it? It's free. Why are you going to be that roadblock? How did you go ahead and do the and handle the same issue? What's that look like?
Well, handling it in my normal, colorful way, I would tell them that, you know what, just like a drug dealer, the first hit's for free. But they have often really bad consequences after. So it really grabs their attention when that happens. But you know, a lot of times when you look at these products, as I mentioned earlier, they're just trying to get your foot in the door. I said, for one, is it something that we can sustain after it goes away? But it's probably a reason why we haven't purchased it already. It may be something that the budget can't absorb. And then you get your hopes all up on this product. That may be a really great product, but what happens after the free goes away? Is there going to be money to utilize this product? And what is the outcome we're going to get from this product? Something, and I'm in the process of putting something together. I'm actually going to borrow from one of a district in Georgia called Fulton County. They have this nice little graphic in their department. And it's like an umbrella, and all the little sleeves in the umbrella are the various tools that they can support. And then on the outside, raining down are all the other tools that you see. And they're like, hey, we can't protect you once you get outside of this umbrella for all these different tools. You have to stay under this umbrella to support. Now, if you go outside of this umbrella, then you put yourself and your students at risk once you start doing that. And to your point, as you mentioned earlier, Tom, and those slivers of the umbrella, they put in all the other tools that are out there that can compare to what they're doing. So as you mentioned, if it's a video conferencing, if they're using Google Meet or Microsoft Teams, then they'll put in, okay, it works just like Zoom. It works just like WebEx. It works just like GoToMeet. So they then align all in a crosswalk format, align all those other products to it to see what it can do and how it works. So it's really about letting them know, hey, there's a reason why we don't have it, but what we can do to that's similar to that product and to give you that same impact, that same learning outcome that you want in your classroom. But it's really key to let teachers know that free isn't always free. It comes at a cost, and are you willing to pay the cost as an educator when something goes awry with that product? So, Dana, you mentioned like with the Zoom thing, when those when the news stories started coming out, you know, we let them know, hey, this is the reason why, because, you know, yes, they're going to fix it, yes, they're going to make corrections, but today, this is what we can protect you on, this is what we can guarantee. And our department, this is that umbrella of protection that we have. But once you step out of it, I'm sorry, we can't help you. We can't protect you. And so when the tech support, it doesn't go there, then that's when like, well, I guess I'll use what you have here. That definitely makes a big difference in getting people under your protection, if you will.
Yeah, so well said. And we do want to give a shout out to those places that offered support, offered things for free, wanting to believe that they were all very well intended in that regard. But understanding from a technology end, if you're a teacher watching this or those thing, and understanding as superintendents, we'd hear from them all the time of, and I'm getting 100 emails a day saying, this is it, this is all you need. And, you know, and just how that can come across there as well. So I do want to take a moment, if I could, to remind our viewers that the hashtag for today's webinar is Future Ready, and we hope you're enjoying this great conversation. So let me ask you a little bit about training. You know, cybersecurity training is absolutely not this one size fits all or just like a once and done beginning of the school year type training or type professional learning, because we know that ongoing data privacy and security is really critical. So how do we provide ongoing data privacy and security training for our staff, for our students, especially during remote learning? One of the things that we do at Future Ready at some of our institutes and other things is, you know, we'll often ask, as a quick example for anybody in the audience, is how many of you are a trained lawyer? And like very rarely does a hand go up. Yet we are all legally responsible for this stuff. I also know from a tech director's end, and I've felt it myself, there can be a lot of animosity here. Again, going back to like, why are they blocking that? Why are they locking that? Why can't they just say yes to whatever it might be? And so there's a lot of finger pointing here, which also can lead to a lot of culture issues in a department or in a district office or even in a district across the board. So let's talk about the professional learning end as that way for support. So how do we support our staff? What does that look like? How do we support even our students and giving them, I mean, it's really a life skill with everything being online, especially during remote learning. And so, Dana, let's go back over to you if we could. Like, you've mentioned it a few times. What's professional learning look like in this area for you?
So professional learning in our district is not certainly a beginning of the year PowerPoint presentation, do's and don'ts. It's an ongoing throughout the year process where we have videos that people are mandated to watch every month. They have different flavors to them. If there's anything that, you know, we need to review because there's something new that came out, we'll go ahead and do that. We also sort of send some test information out so that we can see, are the videos that we're sending, you know, the learning, is the learning actually occurring? If not, then we do sit down and we have to meet with people individually or in a group and help them out to see where they may be making some mistakes. I would say that training is almost an ongoing daily thing that I have to focus on. You know, we try to encourage people, don't forward emails that might be suspicious to myself or anyone else in the tech department. That's not a good idea to do because then it just further infects things. Do we still have it occurring? Sure, it happens. So I would say that training is a daily thing. And for us, it goes back to the conversations. It goes back to communication and making sure that people know and understand that we're here to help. We're here to make sure that everyone is safe. And if there's something going on and we don't know about it, then we obviously can't help people. So one of the solutions that we're using is something called Know Before. It's a great training tool. There's a series, and honestly, the series that they have, you know, there's a lot of water cooler conversation about them because it's sort of a soap opera-esque type, but it really does build upon some great information and does provide the, you know, some really good learning for our staff members. You know, as far as students are concerned, we do take a look at some of the solutions or some of the modules out in Nearpod. They have some great tools out there that associate to Common Sense Media. And we use a lot of that work to help train our students and provide some learning for our students in those areas, you know, for data protection, for media literacy, for tech, for different tech pieces that, you know, they would like to know more about. So those are some of the things that we do here as far as, you know, training for our teachers and our students.
That's great. Adam, how about you? What does that look like for you all?
One of the things that we were able to do during the pandemic is utilize, we were using WebEx, as I mentioned earlier. It really allowed us to get all kinds of teachers that normally would not stay for an afternoon professional learning to participate. I mean, our participation was literally out of the roof. I mean, we were having 200 and 300 teachers attending a training on utilizing the tools because it was what they needed at that time. It, you know, it was, we were always doing these trainings and things of that nature. We were trying our best to make it relevant to the instruction of what was happening in their classrooms, but until they actually, they were up against the wall, now became important. As you mentioned earlier, we've all been in the classroom before. So, I was one of those guilty teachers where I had a couple of files that I put emails in. Okay, this is the second email, so this one is really important. I need to do it. This is one that I feel my principal sent out because they had to. And so I may or may not prioritize that one. So I think that's kind of what our teachers are doing with some of the training. It was like, okay, yeah, I'm supposed to be using my learning management platform. Yeah, I'm supposed to be using Google Docs or Microsoft Documents. But, you know, it's not something that I'm being evaluated on today. So when all of a sudden it was the thing that they had to do, then everybody got on board. It was no longer any kind of fighting to get anyone to log into a session. And it really, they realized, oh my gosh, all these resources are here. I didn't know. And so my team was inundated. I'm like, hey, y'all are about to be the most popular people in the district right now. So just get ready for it. And so they were able to provide that on time learning. And what we were able to also see, the teachers that were utilizing these tools, the parents, they loved it because they're like, okay, this is the stuff that we were doing. But the teachers who were all of a sudden now utilizing those platforms, we saw there were a lot of questions from a lot of students and parents on how to access the tools and the different workflow. So what we then decided to do was create a support line. So it was an email address that parents could go put in their questions and they got called back if they needed or an email response in real time from someone to support them. During certain hours of the day, we actually had a tech support hotline. So in my district, we have about 20,000 students. So we do have a technology support specialist. It's kind of like a paraprofessional type position. And so during the COVID period, when we were out, those staff members really didn't have any work, if you will, to do because they weren't working with students in real time. So that gave them the perfect opportunity to kind of run our switchboard, if you will, so parents could call in. Because let's be honest, a lot of us can send in a help request email, be like, I just want to talk to somebody. I need to tell them what's going on. So having the ability to pick up the phone and call somebody and answer your question and in real time, and we utilize Splashtop and Chrome Remote Desktop tools, so they were able to, you know, remote in and talk them through the process, really provided that on-time support. So it really, I feel, gave the technology department a time to shine and people to see all the awesome things that we were doing. And they were like, oh my gosh, I didn't know y'all had the ability or had the resources or the tools to do all this stuff. So, you know, it was really great for the team to get that opportunity. And, you know, as a tech director, and I know, Damon, you feel the same way. Anytime we can get our people out there to shine, because oftentimes technology, we don't get a chance to come out in the front until things stop working. You know, when the network goes down, the phones aren't working, someone can't open their email, then that's when we're out there, but it's more of a fix versus let's show you how we shine and show us the stuff that we do. So one thing I can say that came from the COVID pandemic outage, it gave technology a time to be up front and center and to sit on that big podium. And hopefully everyone was able to rise to the occasion across the country.
Yeah, Adam, I'm laughing as you're talking about tech support in person, and because I'm the guy that is guilty of calling for tech support, and the moment I hear hello from whatever airline or whatever place, I'm like pounding zero just to get to somebody, right? Because I don't want to be talking to a machine 45 times. And it just goes and shows the human side of our world. But I also want to pause for a minute and recognize a couple of our partners in this area, because as a former tech director of a medium-sized district, certainly not a county-sized district there were times that I almost felt alone in terms of like, well, who supports me? Like, you know, who can I learn from? How do I get professional learning in areas that I might not know? Or where's my blind spots? And so one, I want to give a shout out to the Future of Privacy Forum, FPF.org. They're one of our Future Ready partners. They are one of the best privacy related resources. In fact, just a few weeks ago, they released a professional learning module around remote learning and privacy, and it's brilliant. So great resources. Let's not reinvent the wheel here in so many of those things. And the other one I would say is our Future Ready partner that I mentioned earlier is Konica Minolta, because I know that they're working side by side with tech directors, with technology departments to do things like ping our networks to see where vulnerabilities are, or to do some of the professional learning side of this to help in areas that, let's face it, not everybody has expertise, yet we're often responsible for it in those areas. And so certainly reaching out and getting partners to support us in that is really something that's well done. So let me ask you a couple questions before we start to wrap up here. One of the things that often comes up inside districts, you know, is this need for access. Or maybe I'm in the business department and here I need to access these things while I'm working remotely. Or hey, I'm a teacher and I need to access files over here. So this idea around remote learning amplifying really that need for remote access, VPN, you know, how has your district handled things around VPN and those that need access at that level to really remote in? So Adam, how have you guys handled that?
very carefully. Of course, when the pandemic hit, we were initially under the idea that it'd be probably about 2 weeks, and it ran right into our spring break. So we were like, okay, 3 weeks, we'll be out. And even with that being said, we thought that the people who needed to be on site, our business office and things of that nature, that they would be able to come into the office and kind of handle those things that they needed to do. So we weren't really, you know, in a rush to give VPN access to individuals. But once we saw that this was going to be longer and the shelter in place was something that was being discussed, we knew we had to do something. So we handled it by providing VPN access to our essential staff. So all of our director level people, individuals who needed access to our finance service. So things that they had to get internet access, get on our network to access, we wanted to make sure those users, our bookkeepers. So we really tried to lock it down to our finance people. And the ones who wanted to be able to access their local drives, this was one of those things where we're like, hey, you're going to have to get on site and do what we've been trying to get you to do for the past 3 or 4 years. Utilize OneDrive. Move your files off of your H drive, S drive, Z drive, whatever. Move it to your OneDrive. You can have access anytime, anywhere. But luckily, we have been in the process of weaning ourselves off of that. So most of our teachers and most of our administrators had already made that change. Because once you start opening up VPN access and you're giving it to all kinds of users, so many things can go wrong. So we really have been doing our best to limit it. And now that we're kind of getting back into the office, we're going through and removing that access to those users unless they're at the highest level and they need to have access to it. So the users who were having that access, we're in the process of reeling it back in so we can make sure that they don't have it. But then also, you know, keeping a list of everyone who we gave that access to so we know we can pull that access back from them. And here's something that we also did. We actually sent us a spear phishing attack at those people too. So we had that list of people who we knew had VPN access, and then we phished them to see whether or not they would click on it. We had a few of those people. We were like, hey, this is why we're very limited, because just that easy, we sent an email to you and you shared some information that you weren't supposed to share. And so just that easy, someone could have gotten access to that. So we also use it as a teaching moment for those people that we've given higher access to make sure that they are aware that they have to follow safety and security with those accounts, because they're high targeted accounts based on the number of emails they send and on their title. Because a lot of these people will go to the website and see that you're a director, you're a finance person, you probably have more access than a regular teacher. those are the people that they're going to try to target and access. So making sure they're aware of those so they can put that extra level of safety and security on their end, because we know the end user is the weakest link when you start talking about security and data privacy.
Yeah, and I really like the fact that you all did that under the precursor that is, this isn't a I got ya, it's a we've got you kind of mindset, right? And helping to support and helping to teach. And, you know, I'm thinking back to working with the district earlier this year where the superintendent had gone on vacation. He put out on social media, and well-deserved, they certainly work hard, that he was going to be in Mexico and he was out there enjoying time with his family. And didn't the business official get an email about paying a bill from the superintendent saying something along the lines of, hey, I'm in here in Mexico. I totally forgot to pay this bill. Can you mind paying it? And when the superintendent came back, the business official said, hey, I took care of that bill for you, no problem. And the superintendent had no idea what he was talking about. And the district happened to pay a bill that they didn't owe because they put it out there. And so that's the kind of thing. And you're right, Adam, you bring up the point of, especially the higher up that we go, the more buying power that we have, the more authority we have as a superintendent, maybe a board member, or certainly our budget office, really have to be conscious about that the most, for sure. Dana, what about you? What does that look like in terms of access there as well for you all?
In New York, in January, there was a recent mandate. It's called Ed Law 2D. It's really all about data privacy and security. And prior to that, we knew that this was coming. It was part of a conversation for quite some time. So with that being said, we really spent a lot of time looking at what that could mean and the resources that we were going to be mandated to follow. So one of them is the NIST Cybersecurity Framework. So we've been going through each one of those lines to see, you know, are we covered? If we're not, you know, what's our time frame? So there is a question in there about VPN and, you know, outside access. So we knew that we needed to really limit that. So prior to closing, we sat down and made a list of all the people we thought would really need access outside. And that really boiled down to our business office, the business official, the treasurer, you know, the HR person, anything that they needed to do in order to perform their duties away from the district. So we really focused on getting some laptops out to those folks, district issued with the VPN information, you know, already configured. We met with them, we trained them on how to use it. We made sure that we stressed, you know, when you're not using it, you need to make sure that you close out, you know, all those sorts of things that you want to put in place. That helped us a lot with what we call user envy in our district, which, you know, everybody wants access to everything. And really, you only want to do that if it makes sense for the job that they're performing. So, you know, we use that term quite often, like, oh, might have a little user envy here. So, you know, that's something that we definitely take a very close look at. But in terms of now that we're starting to return, just like Adam had indicated, we are also starting to pull back some of that information as it's necessary. Our offices will return back to 100% capacity in July. So we're looking at another couple more weeks of people that might be working from home. So it's been, it's an interesting ride. And one of the things that we used for the rest of the staff, which we've had in place for many years now, is ClassLink, which is a single sign-on solution. And ClassLink has definitely helped tremendously with security, with privacy, accessing network files while you're away from the network. It really helps to take all the different places that you're saving information and really look at one platform to access them or even search for them. And that's also been very helpful with our remote learning piece, because if there's an app on the desktop, you know it's something that you can use. So it was a pretty simple thing to do. So I honestly, ClassLink is, we've been using it for, like I said, a number of years, and very thankful for the work that they've done. They've provided tremendous support for us in that area.
Awesome. So thanks for sharing that. I do want to remind our viewers one final time about today's webinar, the hashtag being future ready. We encourage that conversation online like we do every day. So as we start to wrap up, two final questions for you. One, as we look forward, you know, districts, one of the things around the prior future ready has been focused on equity and access, equity and opportunity since our inception. And, you know, equity and access really came to the front burner, because if kids didn't have access, many times their learning stopped, right? What's been called the homework gap was not really the learning gap when we look at that. So this idea around remote learning and providing things like access points, places using things like Kijit, those kinds of things, to help the learning at home, you know, when we look at all those pieces, it also in and of itself brought up some additional conversations that needed to be had around what if it's a district issued access point around things around like filtering and so on. So talk to us and just reflect a little bit as you look forward to a new school year. What are some of those conversations you're having around the digital equity side, the homework gap side, handing out devices, but then around the filtering side, cybersecurity piece to all of that, as there gets to be many, many layers to all of these conversations and work. So Dana, let's start with you on that piece, if you could.
So really what you're looking to do is have us peel away the onion to get to the core is what you're saying. That's a lot. That's a lot of information right there. With that being said, our district had a team of people that attended a Future Ready Institute in New Hampshire this fall. And one of the activities that we performed led us to really understanding and realizing that we needed to take a look at some digital equity in our district. We had already, you know, created that one-to-one environment where every student in grades K all the way through high school, 12th grade, had a device to use. We already had a one-to-one initiative with our staff. So we were covered when it came to devices. However, the devices go home in grades 6 through 12. So in the fall, we really decided to take a look at how many families are really struggling with access at home. How many of them really need some assistance in that area? So we definitely contacted a few people within our own district that had some of that information, and we were able to really reach out to those families. Also, in the meantime, we reached out to different companies that could help us with that. And ultimately, we were awarded with a grant through T-Mobile, the Empowered Ed program, and we were able to get some hotspots for the district. And that occurred previous to the pandemic. So we were able to get them ordered. They were actually here and arrived, I would say, a couple weeks before we were sent home. So the timing was just absolutely perfect with that. We were able to get the hotspots distributed to those families, and any child in that house that had a district device were able to connect to that. And all of our devices are filtered. So whether they're, you know, in network or they're away from the network, they're all being filtered through the same system with the same rights that they would have if they were here in school. So I can't thank Future Ready enough for providing that opportunity for our group to have the conversation and really dig deep and take a look at some of the things that, you know, we really needed to focus on in terms of the equity piece. And that has helped tremendously in our district. Our families are so thankful. Just yesterday, I had someone who, you know, called and said, you know, there's something going on with the hotspot. So we traded it out. It was no big deal. But our families have definitely been appreciative to that, and our teachers as well. So it's been an ongoing process. If a teacher is finding that someone's not connecting, they reach out to them. And we've had many instances where families have said, you know, no, we no longer have access. So we were able to get access to them so that they can do the things that they needed to do. I mean, honestly, it's no longer a privilege to have that. It really is something that should be considered as a utility. And I know, Tom, you're doing a lot of work in that area. So thank you for having a voice at that table and listening to the rest of us as we try to climb that mountain.
Yeah, well, thanks, Dana. And thanks for the Future Ready shout. Certainly wasn't, we didn't ask you to do that by any means, but we do certainly appreciate that. So thank you for the Future Ready shout. It does mean a lot. And as just to reiterate, equity is so core to our work. It's the lens. It's not some add-on. It's not some nice to do. It's the lens in which we need to see the world, especially for our traditionally marginalized groups of students. So Adam, if you could jump in there, you obviously from a larger scale district, to answer that same question, how are you handling some of the remote learning, digital equity, but yet cybersecurity conversations that you're having moving forward?
Pretty simple. Mo devices, mo problems. You know, we're trying to figure it out. We were already on a one-to-one journey in the district where we had been starting the process with 20,000 students and also having about 70% of our students qualify for free reduced lunches. We're still recovering, like most districts, from the recession that was hit. So we're just getting back close to what we should be receiving from the state this year prior to the COVID hitting. So we were already kind of behind trying to update and get where we needed to be with devices. So this has put us in one of those situations where we definitely have been looking for various funding sources. We also were able to receive the T-Mobile grant we had a couple years ago with HP Chromebooks that were cellular. So we had those, so that came in really handy. We had about 250 of those devices. So being able to push some of those out to students, we split those up and they were able to have cellular access in those areas. But we still have district, parts of the district being an entire county that are more rural in nature. And so those parts, they don't have fiber going to their homes. They don't have cellular access and consistent in those areas as well. So even providing those students with hotspots wasn't really a good option. So we are still looking at options to light up some of our parking lots of our schools. So you can get internet access, you know, close to all of our buildings, but we have some larger high schools. So we're looking at lighting up the entire parking lot. So you can pull up in the parking lot and get access. And with that, we're still using our own internet. So when you look at some of the other solutions, you still have that monthly bill, if you will, whether you're using Kijiji, Cradlepoint, whatever, there's still that monthly charge that a district would have to incur. And currently those charges are something that's irratable. So, you know, looking at, and I know we've gone through the modernization of E-rate, which is great. It's made our life a whole lot easier. But now that we have new problems, hopefully we can have conversations about new solutions. So opening back up that connectivity piece, we're no longer just talking about connectivity to the buildings. We're talking about connectivity outside of the building. So what does that look like? Are we going to be able to utilize other resources through federally funded programs to give students access, whether it's through Title I, whether it's through E-rate. So being able to utilize some of those federal dollars to connectivity or for devices for end users is definitely going to be the next step of where we need to be to really get that where it has to be, because right now, internet access and having a device, that is something that's going to be a get people connected and to just survive. During this pandemic, I know I had a doctor's appointment and I did it via a Zoom where he, you know, wanted me, like, make sure your connection's good. Let me hold it up. Let me look at your eyes, open your mouth. You know, so all this was done via technology. So now we're saying living is going to be something that you have to have internet access and a device for. And if it's that is essential to getting medical care and learning, we have to do a better job of providing that to our students, to our families, because it's just a life skill. It's something that they have to have, as simple as being able to go to a post office, a mailbox, and get a piece of mail out. We have to have some kind of connectivity for everyone if this is the way teaching and learning gonna happen, because if we don't, we're gonna increase that gap and we're gonna still have the haves and the have-nots, and we can't have that in our country. We're the greatest country on earth, so we have to do our part as educators to be advocates and make sure this is something that's at the forefront of school districts, of our county, city representatives, to our state, and all the way to the national level.
Awesome. So well said. And, you know, just a couple of weeks ago we had, or just a little over a week ago, we had our Future Ready Tech Leader Summit joined by Jessica Rosenwurzel and hundreds of tech directors, superintendents, where we talked about those exact issues moving forward. And so thank you for co-leading that, Adam, there as well. And since we're talking about that, I'll give a shout out to our Instructional Leadership One. Here we are on July 8th. And so about a week from now, and Dana is going to be one of the MCs for that event there as well. And so at Future Ready, we work to really support you guys in this kind of work and have these kinds of conversations, because together we are better for kids. So we are really short on time. So I'm going to ask you each 30 seconds or less, one final question for you. We've got a lot of viewers today, from superintendents to tech directors, even some teachers, I'm guessing, you know, to state leaders. And as they move forward towards the fall, and as they think about remote learning being in some form in some hybrid environment or full-time remote learning, maybe in their area, what's one piece of advice that you have, regardless of what their role is moving forward? So Dana, over to you first.
Honestly, it's all about working together. It's all about communication, and it's all about having those plans in place that everybody really knows about. So, you know, if you're a tech person, work with your curriculum person. Make sure that the teachers and the students have what they need, have some sort of a plan. That would be my biggest, work together and communicate.
Awesome. Adam, how about you, Adam?
My biggest thing is, and I've been saying it through this whole pandemic to my team, stay centered. You know, it's going back to that know your why. You know, the why is in the center. you have to know why you're doing this. You have to stay centered because you're going to get inundated. People are going to be pulling you in a million directions, whether you're rolling out more devices, whether it's access, whether it's you had an outbreak at one of your schools, whether it's dealing with your own family and life system, because you have to remember at the end of the day, when you finish punching the clock, you're a husband, father, parent, mother, whatever the case may be, you have to stay focused and centered because it will drive you crazy. So definitely make sure you remember why you are doing this work and stay centered on why you are coming to work every day and who you're going home, because that is the most important thing in your life.
It's hard to beat those two things right there. You two are incredible. You know, I want to remind our viewers that information on Future Ready can be found at futureready.org. And we encourage and challenge district superintendents to join the over 3,400 others that have signed the Future Ready District Pledge. I also want to encourage our viewers to get involved with our growing strands, from district leaders to tech leaders to principals, librarians, instructional coaches, to our newly launched school board strand. We've really vastly expanded the reach of Future Ready schools over the past few years. You can also check out our Facebook groups and ongoing activities to stay connected with those working alongside of you throughout the nation each day. Also, I encourage you to check out the season one of our Leading Through Unprecedented Times podcast series at futureready.org/podcast. And a shout out to one we'll be launching next week, our Tech Leaders podcast. And Adam is one of the MCs for that with Carl Hooker, called Undisrupted, and looking forward to that as well. I want to thank Adam and Dana one final time, and thank all of you, our viewers, for joining us for making this Future Ready webinar possible. And a special thanks one last time to our Future Ready partner, Konica Minolta, for also making it possible and for being wonderful partners. Don't forget to connect with us all here at Future Ready on Twitter, Instagram, and on Facebook. If you missed any of today's conversation, it's going to be archived on our website and our Future Ready YouTube channel soon after this webinar. Thanks again for joining us here at Future Ready. Have a fabulous day, an amazing summer, and we'll see you next time.